In the garage of Dr. Frank Conrad, on November 2nd, 1920, the first scheduled pre-advertised radio program in the United States went on the air. Station KDKA was broadcasting returns of the presidential race on the evening of Election Day. From a humble beginning in a Pittsburgh garage to the sumptuous studios of the national radio networks in New York, Chicago, and Hollywood, these are the years we refer to as the golden age of radio.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing them yourself.
Hal Kemp, on the air for Griffin.
It's time to shine, shine your shoes anyway.
Tony Home Permanent presents...
This is Nora Drake.
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889. Your host, Dick Bertel, will be with you in a moment after this word.
Do you want to get rich? Rich, you say? Who doesn't? Well, here's how. Save a little each payday. And do it where little deposits are welcome, at the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. A small sum saved regularly will accumulate astoundingly fast. Hard work, frugal living, regular saving, all old-fashioned virtues, but the only sure way to succeed, even to become rich. The place to save before you spend? The Big B. The big, strong bank built on faithful small deposits from loyal depositors. Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Four convenient offices, New Britain, West Hartford, and on the border of Rocky Hill and Wethersfield. Don't wait. Start saving small or big now.
Member FDIC. And now the host of the Golden Age of Radio, Dick Bertel.
Good evening. And with me, once again, to share this hour of old-time radio memories with you is the man with 2,500 hours of radio memories on tape, Mr. Ed Corcoran.
Well, very good to be with you again, Dick.
Our show tonight, Ed, is originating from New Haven. As a matter of fact, we're at the first East Coast Convention of Golden Radio Buffs at the Holiday Inn here in New Haven. And we have a special guest tonight, don't we?
I think one of the most famous personalities ever come down the pike in radio, Dick, no doubt about it.
I think perhaps the best way to introduce our guest would be to let him do the signature that he did for hundreds of radio broadcasts every Sunday afternoon at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
What a laugh.
That's beautiful. Our guest is Brett Morrison, who played the shadow from 1944 until the very end, I guess, Brett, about
yes,
the mid-50s.
About the mid-50s, right.
Was that your most challenging role, would you say?
Well, I think it was the most interesting role I've ever played. I've had others that were more challenging from an actor's standpoint, but this was the most fun, I think, and I think I had the most satisfaction out of doing that.
I would think so. It was a show that was listened to by, I would guess, half of America every Sunday afternoon.
Well, so I'm led to believe. I mean, people tell me now when they meet me, oh, I can remember driving down in our car and we'd have to turn, all the radios in the cars would be turned down to the shadow at 5 o'clock on the way home. I was known as the 5 o'clock shadow.
How much blue coal did you consume?
Not very much, I'm afraid. It wasn't my color.
Brett, we can go back to the very beginnings of your career. We'll do that later, but I think it would be fun to explore this this role, this character, the shadow. How did you happen to get the part?
Well, I had just arrived in New York in 1944. I got out of the Army in Special Service. And after a long career in radio preceding that, I go back to about 1929. But I'd just arrived in New York. I came on here when I got out of the Army. And the first show I did was for The Falcon, which was a mystery show. I was scheduled to do that show, and I got a call from an advertising agency, which was Ruth Roth and Ryan at that time, to come in for an audition. Well, I was on the air with The Falcon up until about 15 minutes before this audition was scheduled to end. So I said I wasn't sure that I could make it, but I said I would try. Well, I got to the studio, the recording studio, where they're holding the auditions, about 5 minutes to three. And he said, well, we have to get out of here at 3 o'clock. He said, here, take this and read it. And he handed me the piece of paper, and I walked over to the microphone, I looked at it, and it was the opening and closing signature of The Shadow. Mm-hmm. Well, I had done Mr. First Nighter, and we used to follow The Shadow. Mr. First Nighter came out of Chicago, but The Shadow was done from New York. But while we were waiting to go on with First Nighter, I used to hear the end of The Shadow, and I'd hear the signatures. I just simply read it the way I'd always remembered hearing it. Left the studio, and that was that. I thought, well, you know, nothing will certainly come of that. And about a week later, I got a call and said, you're it. And that was it. It was just as simple as that, and just as unexpected.
Well, you know, there were several actors who preceded you, but I think that your name will always be associated with this part.
Well, I did it for so many years. I mean, longer than anyone else. Most of the others, including Bill Johnstone and before him, Orson Welles. Orson Welles was the first one to do The Shadow when he became the leading character in the story itself. Previous to that, it was played by a couple of other who were merely hosts, like Raymond and Inner Sanctum and one thing and another. They merely introduced the story but didn't take part in it as the leading character itself. Mm-hmm. And then when Orson Welles did it in the 30s, late 30s, The Shadow became the leading character.
Well, one thing that's always bothered me, and I think now we'll get a straight answer, how long did it take you to acquire the skill of clouding men's minds?
I never had it, believe me. There are times I wish I did. But I think, actually, in thinking about it in terms of the present day, I think what Lamont Cranston really had, except that it wasn't stated as such in those days, was ESP. Mm-hmm. And the ability for astral projection, and which is now a type of thing that could be understood and
That's
accepted
right.
by people today.
Brett, who were the actresses who played Margot Lane, the only person who knew to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belonged?
Well, I had four Margots. There was Marjorie Anderson, was the first one that when I heard. Then Leslie Woods followed her, Grace Matthews, and then Gertrude Warner.
Gertrude Warner, we were talking before we went on the air, had her start at WTIC, and then, of course, did go on to New York and played rather important roles, not the
yes.
least of which was Margot Lane,
right.
at least in my opinion.
Oh, she was a very fine actress, and we've done many shows together.
Well, Ed, I can just imagine our listeners saying right about this time, are you going to play an excerpt from The Shadow, or aren't you? Shall we?
Yeah, let's do that, Dick.
All right. This is The Shadow.
Your neighborhood blue coal dealer brings you the thrilling adventures of The Shadow, the hard and relentless fight of one man against the forces of evil. These dramatizations are designed to demonstrate forcibly to old and young alike that crime does not pay. But right now, here are some answers to the letters that so many of you have sent John Barclay. Mr. Barclay, here's a question asked by many people. I have an 8-room house and only 2 tons of anthracite in my bin. My dealer has assured me that this is ample for immediate requirements. How long can I expect this coal to last under normal weather conditions?
The answer to that question, Ken, is that in the average 8-room house with normal construction, A ton of coal should last from 4 to 5 weeks this time of year.
Yes, there is enough coal for all. And by sharing equally, everyone can be comfortably warm this winter. And now, back to the Shadow.
The Shadow, Lamont Cranston, a man of wealth, a student of science, and a master of other people's minds, devotes his life to righting wrongs, protecting the innocent, and punishing the guilty. Cranston is known to the underworld as the Shadow. Never seen, only heard, his true identity is known only to his constant friend and aide, Margot Lane. Today's story, Death Stalks the Shadow.
Mallory's in the end cell, Mr. Murdoch. Just talk to him through the bars. You're the last visitor, you'll see.
End cell? Right. Hello, Mallory.
Huh?
It's me, kid. Peter Murdoch.
Murdoch. Gee, I thought you'd never get here.
Come on, pull yourself together, Mallory.
It's easy enough for you to talk. You ain't been sitting here waiting. Every day the chair getting closer.
Now, Mallory.
You're testing the current. Listen. Hear that big dynamo turnover? Coming. They're testing it for me. For me.
Shut up.
Murdoch. Did you see the governor?
Yeah, I saw him, yes.
Well? Oh, say something.
There won't be any reprieve, kid. We're licked.
We're licked? That's funny, Murdoch. You ain't in here. You ain't gonna sit in that chair.
I didn't kill anybody, Mallory.
Why, you dirty double-crossing rat. Who planned that killing? Who promised I'd never even do time for it? You did.
Well, I didn't figure on the Shadow, Mallory.
Yeah, I know. The Shadow. He caught me. He didn't know I was only doing your dirty work for you. I should have told him.
Yeah, but you didn't.
I trusted you. Peter Murdoch, the great lawyer. You said you'd get me off.
I can't win all my cases.
You didn't even try. Throw me to the wolves. So the Shadow wouldn't learn the truth about you.
Well, it worked, didn't it?
Yeah. If I could get through these bars, I'd fix you, Murdoch. Anyhow, I can tell the truth about you. I'll sing so loud.
Sing your head off. My reputation is too good. Nobody will believe you.
The Shadow might believe me, Murdoch. Suppose I told the Shadow who turned Dan Malley from a decent kid into a killer.
Stop dreaming, Malley. This is the death house. Tonight, you're walking right through that door down there, and you're not coming back.
Why, you...
Oh, you'd better forget all about the Shadow. So long, Mallory.
Come back here! Come back here!
So long, sucker.
Hey, Mallory. Mallory, any news for you?
Yeah. Bad news.
Gee, tough luck, kid.
Yeah, but I ain't through yet. Before they burn me, there's something I gotta do.
God! Hey, God! Where's that tin cup? God! God! God!
Pipe down, you guys! Pipe down!
What's the matter, Mally?
I want to talk to Commissioner Weston. I gotta see him right away.
What for?
He's gotta locate somebody for me. Somebody I want to talk to. Well, don't stand there! Get me Commissioner Weston!
Well, good evening, Commissioner.
Preston, how are you? And you, Miss Lane?
Very well, Commissioner Weston.
Won't you join us?
Thanks, but I think not. I'm rather upset tonight.
Well, what's the matter, Commissioner?
Well... Miss Lane, have you ever heard of the Shadow?
The Shadow?
Oh, yes, Margot. You've heard the absurd stories about his great deeds, huh? All poppycock, of course.
I'd give anything to contact the Shadow right this minute.
But why?
A boy named Dan Malley goes to the electric chair tonight with vital information. The only person he'll talk to is the Shadow. It's because I don't know how to find the Shadow, I'm beaten. Well, I won't find him here. So if you'll forgive me, I'll run along. Good night.
Good night, Commissioner Weston.
Good night. Margot, my hunch about Danny's case must be right. Waiter.
Yes, sir.
Waiter, here's money for my bill. Never mind the change.
Thank you, sir.
Come, Margot, quick. I'm going to the death house now. As the Shadow.
Why doesn't he come? Why doesn't he come?
Were you waiting for me, Dan Malley?
Who's that? Who spoke?
The Shadow.
The Shadow?
There isn't much time, Malley. They're coming after you to take you to the chair. Speak quickly. What have you to say?
Plenty.
I can't save you, you know. You killed a man, Mally.
Yeah, I know. But it wasn't my idea, Shadow. Honest, it wasn't.
There was no evidence against anyone else?
Yeah, don't I know it. He's too clever for that.
Who is too clever?
The bird that got me into this.
The smart fellow that sold a dumb kid on crime being a good business.
His name?
Peter Murdoch.
Do you know what you're saying, Dan? Murdoch's a famous criminal lawyer. His reputation...
His reps are blind. Listen, Pete Murdoch's the biggest crook in this section. He's got a piece of everything. But right now he's planning a slum fire that'll kill thousands and net him a million from insurance companies.
If you're telling the truth...
A man doesn't lie when he's only got a few minutes to live, Mr. Shadow. The job's going to be pulled late this week.
I'll investigate it, Dan. If it's true, Peter Murdoch will pay for his crimes. But how can I get proof?
That's easy. Now, listen. There's a friend of mine named Dopey Jake, down by the wharves, number 5 South Street. Jake knows enough about Murdoch's latest plan to prove what I said.
I'll see him.
Yeah, listen. If you can get to the filing cabinet in Murdoch's house, there's records and things, enough to finish him.
The Shadow promises justice, Dan Malley.
That's all I want.
They're coming, Dan.
Okay. I can take it. Thanks, Shadow. Thanks for coming.
Well, Dan, it's time.
Yeah. I know, Warden.
Unlock the door, Gus.
Right, Warden.
Well, here goes.
Take his arms, Gus.
Steady, kid.
I ain't scared. I ain't. Not as scared as Murdoch will be. Wait till the Shadow gets him.
All right, men. Forward.
Shadow. Yeah, don't be Jake. They'll fix him.
Bye, Mally. Come on, kid. Keep your chin up. So long, Mally.
Dan, the other prisoners are saying goodbye.
So long, boys.
We'll be seeing you, Mally.
Murdoch. Jake. The Shadow.
Well, it's great to hear those familiar voices again. Commissioner Weston was played by a very famous radio actor today, a well-known television actor, Brett.
Santos Ortega.
Mm.
Get smile power, the kind of confident, contented countenance that comes from cash. Salted away cash in a Burritt Mutual Savings Bank at the highest legal savings bank interest rate. And you don't need a lot of money to do it. You can save a little. It's the constant, patient, every payday habit of saving that really counts. At the Big B, we love your small deposits. We know they grow for you and for us. Result, we will both have smile power. Plus, we help with our high interest rates paid to you on your savings. Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Deposits insured to $20,000 by FDIC.
Brett, you made reference to the year 1929 before, so I'm not going to embarrass you by mentioning that name again. You opened up the bag, so let's begin in Chicago in 1929.
Well, I was still in school, and I had an aunt working for Universal Pictures in the distribution. And they had just done the picture Dracula with Bela Lugosi and I forget who else was in it at the time. And they wanted to promote the picture. So the publicity department had prepared to do a promotional series. Well, nobody took radio seriously in those days. The actors who were appearing in Chicago in legitimate theater at the time, they just, you know, it was something that was so far beneath them that no one would possibly be interested in this. So the publicity department was kind of stuck. They didn't know what to do. So my aunt happened to mention to the man, he said, well, my nephew is an actor. We had a little theater group in school. And she says, maybe he can help you out. So grasping at straws, I'm sure, this publicity man called me down to the studio. And he said, are you familiar with the play Dracula? And I said, yes, I am. I've done it in stock. I hadn't, but I had seen it in stock. I had played stock, but I didn't happen to play that part. But I was thoroughly familiar with the story. He said, okay, it's your baby. Well, I'd never been on radio in my life before. I didn't know the first thing about it. So I called up some of the kids who were in our group. Among them was Hugh Marlowe, who at that time was Hugh Hipple, was his real name, later became in films, and several others who went on to very big things in early radio in those days. And I said, you want to go on radio? They said, oh, yes, yes, yes. So in all my ignorance, of course, and knowing nothing about radio or anything else about it, all I know is theater. I called these people together, cast it, I played Dracula, and Dr. Seward, I doubled in this production. Did the sound effects, sticking cardboard in electric fans to make a sound of automobiles, one thing or another. And we did this half-hour show, and it was to run half hour every day for 5 days to do the complete story. Well, we were so excited about this whole thing that we went through this first half hour, you know, without realizing, you know, what we were doing. It didn't dawn on us until we were all through and we were off the air, and we all sort of relaxed, and finally Peggy, who was playing the lead, Mina, the girl in the thing, she says, "We were on radio," and fainted dead away. And this was sort of the reaction of all of us at the time. I mean, we were so involved with what we were doing that it never occurred to us, you know, that we were stepping into a medium that we'd never done before in our lives. We knew the first thing about it. No one to direct us, no one to help us. We had to create everything ourselves and use our own imaginations, which, of course, is the whole secret of radio.
Did you make a decision, for example, at the end of this five-day series of Dracula to make radio a career?
Oh, they offered me a show. I did a series after that. Once a week, I did famous one-act plays, mm-hmm. Which I directed and cast and using our own little group. We never got paid, incidentally, but...
Things haven't changed. Now, of course, Chicago was one of the three central origination points for a network radio.
Right, right. Well, I think that was because a lot of the sponsors were located in the Midwest, mm-hmm. and I think they felt that they might have a little tighter control on the shows. Well, actors too, a great many of them came from Chicago because, you see, we didn't have legitimate theater there except for visiting companies that came into play. Other than New York, of course, who had its New York actors here, and Broadway to them was more important than radio, even in those days. To a Chicago actor, this was all you had. These were people who walked into the studio, picked up their scripts, and sat down and really studied them, and, I mean, this was their job. The New York actors, you know, this was something that was a little beneath them. They considered themselves primarily theater people and not radio actors. This was something they did on the side. So they'd be over playing gin rummy until the director said, "Come on, let's go to work," you know. But the Chicago actor didn't. He walked into the studio and picked up his script and he studied it. And consequently, they gave performances that the directors in New York appreciated. And that's why there was most of the Chicago actors who came to New York, I mean, found no trouble at all in getting all the work they could handle.
Let's talk about some of the other shows, of which you did so many. And the one that you mentioned was The First Nighter. Now, did you do this in Chicago or in New York?
In Chicago.
In Chicago.
It only came from Chicago. Mm-hmm. It was sponsored by Campana's Italian Bomb.
Oh, yes. And was Barbara Luddy
Barbara Luddy was the leading lady, and I was the host. I was the one that...
got out of the taxi cab and so forth?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
and invited the people to come in and listen and invited them in to attend our performance.
You never did double in any of the speaking roles, did you?
Oh, yes, sometimes. I did, yes. And I also did the commercials.
Ed, do you think it might be possible to hear that very familiar opening once again?
Yes, the little theater off Times Square, which was some... 1,500 miles away from where he was
yes,
doing it.
Yes, it was quite a ways.
But
Broadway.
Nevertheless, that was what radio was all about, wasn't it? So here it is, Dick.
Campana's First Nighter program. From the little theater off Times Square. Starring Barbara Luddy and Odin Soule, with an all-star cast presented by Campana, the quality name in cosmetics. Theater time on Broadway, and tonight is a special occasion in Theaterland, for a brand new play makes its opening night bow to the public and drama critics at the little theater off Times Square. Yes, an opening night on the Great White Way is the kind of exciting experience that you'll never forget. So let me promptly introduce our host for the evening, the genial First Nighter.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's very pleasant to have you with us this evening. I know the traffic will be heavy, so I suggest we start right off to the theater. My cab is waiting. Won't you step in? All right, driver, the little theater. Up Broadway across 42nd Street, and there ahead of the bright lights across to the side of the little theater off Times Square. I can see the newsreel cameras on trucks recording the event. We'll be there in a minute. Well, here we are.
Have your tickets ready, please.
Have your tickets ready, please. Good evening, Mr. First Nighter. The usher will show you to your seat.
Thank you. We'll go right in. Here we are, ladies and gentlemen, all comfortably seated in the seventh row center. And as usual, on an opening night, the house is a sellout. Also, there's Frank Worth conducting the famous First Nighter Orchestra. Tonight's new play is entitled An Order by the Lieutenant, written by Vernon C. Hoyt and co-starring Barbara Luddy and Olin Soule. The story takes us back to the fall of 1866, and the setting is Fort Riley, Kansas. Miss Luddy is cast as Nancy Colfax, a determined, courageous, and beautiful young lady. Mr. Soule is an eager young lieutenant, Gordon Singleton. And I see that we have a stellar supporting cast tonight. Molly Bear as Sergeant Freeby, Hugh Studebaker as Colonel Willingham, Arthur Hugh Bryan as Private Dabbs, and other famous names. And now it's just about time for the house lights to dim.
Curtain!
There's the signal for first curtain. The house lights are out. And here's the play.
Yes, listening to that does bring back a lot of memories. And, Brett, it confused me because I said, did you do that show in Chicago or New York? And here it is, a program that originated, as you pointed out, only from Chicago, but was set in New York.
Right.
This was the magic, the mystery of radio. Television today, of course, you'd have to be in the city that you were talking about. No question about that. Okay. One thing that our fans may not realize is that you weren't always an actor when on radio. You were also a singer.
Oh, yes. I've done a lot of singing, both in nightclubs and on the air.
What types of shows did you appear on in that capacity, Brett?
Well, back in 1938, when I went back to Chicago from Hollywood, I did the first singing acting strip show that was ever done on radio. It was called Love Song. Ann Seymour was my leading lady. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember, it was a sort of a Graustarkian, very weird sort of thing, which didn't really get off the ground, as I recall, and eventually drifted into just a poetry and song idea with Vincent Pelletier doing the poetry and with my singing. And the dramatic end of it was just simply dropped because it got out of hand. I don't know, it became a very wild sort of weird thing with sort of strange characters running around and spies and one thing and another, not making much sense. And it seemed like the music was sort of dragged in by the heels, and it just missed the boat. But it did develop into a very lovely program which went on for quite a long while as a poetry and song idea. And then later on in New York, I did another one. I guess it was probably the second one that I know of that was done. It was called Song of the Stranger. And it was a story of Pierre Vernet, this French character, who was a member of the French underground and resistance, who came to this country looking for a specific man who killed his buddy, whose father was a member of the United Nations here. And because it was sort of sub rosa, he couldn't receive any assistance from this man at the UN and had to make his own way at the same time that he's looking for this person to exact revenge. So I would get various jobs in various places, and I'd play the piano and sing, and it gave me an excuse to sing about three numbers a day in this thing. We were on three times a week on the Mutual Network.
Well, Brett, you used a French dialect there.
I used dialects in the early days of radio, yes, I did. Mm-hmm. About 21 different dialects, I think.
Just at the drop of a hat?
Or a script.
Can we talk into doing one or two of them for us? Just to.
I don't know. What would you like?
How about a little British?
Oh, British? Yes, of course. That's I haven't done too many British, but it's,
ripping.
Yes, it is ripping. Yes. Don't you know?
Well, that, of course, gave an actor much more flexibility and much more work.
Well, you had to. In the early days of radio, if you really wanted to, you know, be busy and to really earn a living, you had to be very versatile. I've done so many things in radio. I mean, if I wasn't announcing, if I wasn't singing, if I wasn't, you know, I was always doing something. And I think that this was the secret of really staying alive and being able to make a good living.
Why should you save? Barrett Mutual Savings Bank will also try to answer. The reasons for saving are almost endless. One, it can open the door to your new home. Two, it can give you the means to new furniture, a new car, a boat, a vacation. Three, it can help send your children to college. Four, it can give you that glorious feeling of independence and prosperity. Don't ever feel that you have to have large amounts to save. At Barrett, deposits as small as $1 are welcome, really welcome. Start now and save for all these reasons and perhaps some of your own. If you can't save a lot, save a little. At Barrett Mutual Savings Bank, where deposits are safe and earn good dividends. Start your account tomorrow.
Member FDIC.
The Golden Age of Radio is originating tonight from New Haven at the first annual Golden Radio Buff Convention taking place at the Holiday Inn.
Well, we're going to play an example right now of your versatility as you appear in a character role, a prospector who is, in reality, an astronomer. And this is an excerpt from The Mysterious Traveler.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Colgan, and starring three of radio's foremost actors, Brett Morrison, Joyce Gordon, and Leon Janney, in Fire in the Sky.
This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we join two young people who find themselves in the strangest situation human beings ever encountered. It's the story I call Fire in the Sky. It's late evening, and a convertible with the top down is driving along a lonely road in the Shenandoah Valley. The driver is young, in his 20s. So is the girl beside him. They're Mr. and Mrs. Nicholas Ramsey of New York City, married less than 24 hours and honeymooning. Nick Ramsey is driving slowly, for both he and Sally are watching the great golden disc which is rising in the sky above the hills to the west. Not the moon, but the new comet, which the whole world is talking about with excited interest and some apprehension.
Nick, it's so bright. It's grown much brighter since last night.
Yes, I know. Seems to be about half as big as the moon now. Let's turn on the news and see what the radio says about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try Washington. Danny Dunn has been giving a blow-by-blow account of its approach.
And so, everybody, everywhere, this is your feature reporter, Danny Dunn, speaking from Washington. Well, the big news tonight is still Comet X, as it's been nicknamed. Tonight, it seems it's going to pass little old Earth a bit closer than was thought. Maybe inside 10 million miles. But it's nothing to worry about. Can't hurt us any. A comet is just gas, you know. Like some congressman here in Washington. Oh, speaking of Washington, the government has asked me to pass along the following to you. Don't be alarmed if Comet X seems to be getting awfully close.
Well, I guess there's nothing new. I'll turn it off.
It's just an optical illusion.
Nick, look up ahead. Somebody's signaling us with a flashlight.
Yeah, it looks like an old codger, one of the local natives, I guess.
Well, do you think we ought to stop? Such a lonely road.
Oh, he probably just wants a lift. Anyway, he's so old he couldn't hurt us any. Hello, you want a lift?
Oh, evening, folks. Mighty glad you come along. I need some help bad.
Help?
It's my partner. Rock slide fell on him, crushed his chest in. He's down in the mine. I need help to get him out.
You're a miner?
That's right, ma'am. Name's Jones. Jerry Jones. We got us a mine up this road about a quarter of a mile. Poor Sam hurt himself an hour ago. Been waiting ever since for somebody to come along.
Well, Sally, I guess it's up to us. Well, come along, Sally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry we haven't any first aid equipment, Mr. Jones.
Oh, got some down below. This way, Mr. Ramsey. I have to go down on the lift.
Nick, look how bright it is. The comet seems to be growing bigger by the minute.
Here we are. Step inside, folks. I got the flashlight.
Huh. We've got a regular mine lift in here. Machinery and everything.
Please step on lift, Mr. Ramsey.
Nick, I think this is a trick.
I'm afraid you have to, Mr. Ramsey. Believe me, I'll shoot if you try to get away.
Nick, a gun.
Now listen, put away that revolver. I don't know what kind of crazy scheme this is,
It's not crazy. I'm trying to save your lives.
Save our lives?
You see that comet in the sky?
Yes.
They're calling it Comet X. They should be calling it Doomsday.
You are crazy.
That's enough talk. In 14 hours, this Earth and that comet are going to meet, and time is precious. Get on that lift, Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey, or I'll shoot. Now, that's better. Now, hold on tightly. Don't do anything foolish. If you don't know how to operate this lift, then we have a 1,000-foot drop below us.
We've been going down for so long now.
We're almost at the bottom, Mrs. Ramsey. Please don't be frightened. I'm doing this for your own good.
Say, who are you? You're not a native. You lost your hillbilly accent long ago.
No, I'm not. It was just a crude disguise. My name is Jeremiah Jones, formerly Professor Jones. Now, we've reached bottom. The surface of the Earth is 1,000 feet above us. Now, Mr. Ramsey, if you and your wife try to attack me, you might succeed. But you'd be very foolish. You'll need me to get you out of here again.
Yes, I suppose that's right.
Very well, please walk quietly ahead of me. These old mine shafts are quite level. I'll shine my flashlight ahead and you won't have any difficulty.
I suppose we have to humor you, but why are you doing this? What are you up to?
You won't believe me if I tell you, Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey, that you two are the most important people in the world tonight. So just walk ahead of me and we'll have the explanations later. Careful, there's a door ahead of you.
Oh, yes.
Push it open and go in.
Good Lord.
Nick, we're in a room. Completely furnished.
Yeah.
Chairs, tables, electric lights. Well, there's even a radio.
Through those archways, I can see a kitchen, another room. Why, this place is like a furnished apartment.
1,000 feet underground, with walls of solid rock. And he's locked us in here. But why, Nick, why?
I don't know, Sally, I don't know. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Nick, what time is it? How long have we been down here?
We've been locked in here nearly 4 hours.
Nick, it's crazy. He's a madman. He must be.
You know, I've just placed his name. Professor Jeremiah Jones.
Who is he?
He's an obscure astronomer who 10 years ago claimed to have discovered a comet no one else could see. Then he dropped out of sight.
He seems to have an obsession about comets. He said Comet X should be called Doomsday.
Yes, I know. And I can't help wondering. Let's turn on that radio again. I have a hunch we'll be getting some news soon. Real news.
All right. It's just music.
Well, let's leave it on. It may be a bulletin.
Mm.
Hello, everybody. This is your special reporter, Danny Dunn, back with a very important bulletin.
Nick.
Shh, we've got to hear this.
I've just come from a meeting at the Smithsonian Institute, and I have some last-minute news about our mysterious visitor, Comet X.
He's leading up to something.
Now, folks, I don't want to alarm you. Panic won't help anybody. But it looks as if there may be some danger after all, and it's only common sense to be prepared for it.
Oh, Nick.
It seems Comet X is not holding to the course predicted for it. Its orbit now intersects the Earth's. So bright you can see it blazing away in the morning sky like a baby sun. It's about 4 hours before its path intersects ours.
4 hours?
I repeat again the official advice. Take shelter. Stay undercover for the next few days, but don't panic. Panic is more dangerous than the comet, believe me. I have to admit that a lot of people have unfortunately lost their heads the last few hours. Roads leading out of every city are clogged with refugees trying to get away. Good many people have been killed in the crush of crowds fleeing the cities. Our news from other places is a bit scanty. Some lines are down. And I'll keep bringing you all the bulletins as they come in.
Well, are you convinced now, Mr. Ramsey?
Oh, people are losing their heads because they're scared. But that still doesn't say the comet is actually dangerous to the Earth.
Yes, I know. It wouldn't be if it was just an ordinary comet. But it isn't.
Well, what is it then?
Mr. Ramsey, the fiery head of Comet X is radioactive.
Radioactive?
It will envelop the world in a searing bath of atomic fire. In a dozen hours, civilization will have come to an end.
Fire in the Sky, from The Mysterious Traveler, starring our guest on the Golden Age of Radio, Brett Morrison.
You're listening to The Golden Age of Radio, brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank.
How much should you save? The friendly folks at the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, generally say that you should have 6 months' pay in savings. Once reached, your savings goal will depend upon both the wants and needs of your family. Children need $10,000 or thereabout to finance college, or perhaps your goal is the down payment for a home. Money for a more comfortable retirement, or a new car. Don't wait another day. Stop in at Main, Slater Road, Corbin's Corner, or Weather Rock offices of the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. With passbook savings from 5% to certificates of deposit as high as 6%. The savings people at the Big B have a program tailored to fit your specific needs. So, don't wait. Make a date at Burritt Mutual Savings Bank.
Member FDIC.
Well, Brett, let's see now. You got out of the Army in 1944. You moved to New York. You were given the part of the shadow. Did you make New York your home for the remainder of your radio career?
Yes, I did. And then when the shadow went off the air, just before it went off and then after it went off, I transferred my abilities to a new source of income, of which there are only about six of us in the country, I guess, that are qualified for this particular work, the dubbing of foreign films into English. Both the writing, direction, and revoicing or reenactment of these films, doing all three things, which meant we have to take the film, mm-hmm. view it on a moviola, paraphrase what they're saying in their particular language into English, matching the lip movements so that it gives the illusion that they're speaking English rather than French or Italian or German or Japanese or whatever the language happens to be. Then recasting it with actors who will fit the characters on the screen, and directing the actual redramatization of these pictures and films.
And it's that limited a field that just a handful of actors are able to do this.
It's very exacting and work, and it's a very specialized field, and it means having an innate sense of rhythm and timing, and a very fast study, because you don't get a chance to learn your dialogue ahead of time. You come in and there's a loop of film, section of film, which has been spliced into a loop which repeats over and over again, and you have a section of dialogue that corresponds to that particular loop on the stand. And the actor has to memorize that as quickly as possible so that he can watch the screen and watch those lips. And you cannot read, you cannot look down. The minute you take your eyes off the screen, you're going to be out of sync. So it's a question of reading, learning those lines and reading them against the screen, and until your interpretation and your timing is perfect as far as synchronization is concerned.
And I suppose one of the tricks you might use in synchronization is to watch a particular movement on the screen, because you know that once the hand reaches out, that's when the voice starts, something of that nature.
Yes,
I mean,
as a dubbing actor, all of these things happen, and then as a dubbing director, I mean, where I also direct other actors, you know, into doing the pictures that I have written myself, you're responsible, of course, for the overall performances that are given. And it's very gratifying in a way, because a lot of times you can improve. You can actually improve. You can change a whole story sometimes, which is quite amazing, you know, and we've had to do that.
How do you glamorize a Burritt Mutual Savings Bank savings account? You can't use Hollywood adjectives such as glamorous, stupendous, magnificent, or such. What does describe such a Burritt account? Perhaps steady, dependable, reliable. Not much to shout about, probably, but there when you need it type of assurance. At Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, the safety of your savings is guaranteed by large surplus funds, insurance to $20,000 by FDIC, an agency of the U.S. government, plus a history of good service back to 1889. You get the highest legal interest at Burritt as well. Save where your money is safe and earns good dividends at Burritt Mutual Savings Bank.
Brett, let's bring our listeners up to date. What are you doing now? Where do you make your home?
I live in Palm Springs, California now. I found a little chilly coming here, as a matter of fact. I wasn't quite prepared for it, although it's really pleasant out here, but by contrast, it seems cold. And I intend to go back into the business now. I've been out of it for a couple of years. So there's nothing left for me to do but to go back into either television or motion pictures, one thing kind, and I've recently signed with a new agent. And things look very promising. There seems to be a lot of interest, and I've been suggested for a couple of things which are pending. And I can't mention what they are now, because I'm going to take off the charm in case it doesn't work out. But I think something will happen.
I'm sure it will. Brett Morrison, it's been great fun visiting with you and reminiscing with you about all of the programs you did, your entire radio career. Ed, we just couldn't do much better than Brett Morrison.
No, it's another living legend. We had Parker Finley, who has been around for many years, too.
Yes.
And really have two in a row is really quite something unexpected for us, really.
Greatest New England accent in the world. That's our show for tonight. This is Dick Bertel.
This is Ed Corcoran.
Good night.
Tonight's program has been brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889. The Golden Age of Radio with Dick Bertel was produced and edited by Brian Hartnett, engineered by Dick Zwerko and Bob Schirego. This is Al Terzi.
Pepper Young's Family. The story of your friends, the Youngs, is brought to you by Camay, the mild beauty soap for a smoother, softer complexion.
Rinse out.
so white and rinse so bright.
Broadcasting from New York City, the Lucky Strike program, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and...